Irish Illustrated Insider is sponsored by VisitSouthBend.com. Is it time to check a Notre Dame home game off your bucket list? Has it been too long since you've soaked in the game day atmosphere in person? Whether it's for the first time ever or in a while, start planning your trip to South Bend to watch the Fighting Irish with ideas and inspiration at VisitSouthBend.com.
This is Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, joined by Pete Sampson from The Athletic. It is USC week, a little bit of the luster lost by Notre Dame's 33-20 loss to Louisville last week. But it is Notre Dame USC playing for the 94th time. Notre Dame has had, how many in a row have they won at home, Tim, against USC?
They've won they lost in 2011, so that would be five.
They've won every one since.
Okay. Yep. Five in a row. And
they might have lost twice in 2011, if you want to count it that way, but I think it's still five. That would be.
Yeah. You know, again, lost the luster a little bit, but I made a comment today's Thursday thoughts that Notre Dame should feel like they're going to win, and a lot of people don't feel the same as I do about that. I'm not asking the fans to feel good about winning, but Notre Dame should. They're just a few weeks removed from going head-to-head with Ohio State, and Ohio State's defense is a lot better than USC's. I get what's happened the last couple of weeks and some of the glow on the season. A lot of the glow on the season is gone here, but a great opportunity for Notre Dame to get back on the horse, move to 6-2, and then have a shot at finishing out with a 10-2 record, but one step at a time. Guys, the point spread on this, surprising for a lot of people, is that Notre Dame is a 2.5-point favorite. The over-under is 60.5. Just some general thoughts. And by the way, we spoke to Marcus Freeman at noon today, and we'll discuss that a little bit as well.
I remember the old theory I used to have when we're doing our predictions, that never change your bet that you would have had 2 weeks prior just because you saw Notre Dame play. Well, it failed spectacularly last week because I was not going to change from Louisville losing to Notre Dame on the line of scrimmage, and they lost spectacularly on the line of scrimmage. However, Notre Dame was favored over USC coming into the Louisville loss, the Louisville debacle. Vegas knows a lot more about how a team plays over 12 weeks than fans that are dedicated to one team do. Every metric and everybody using metrics and analytics looks at Notre Dame winning this game. I mean, if you're a Notre Dame fan right now, it is hard to say Notre Dame is going to win the game over 60 minutes because one team has Caleb Williams and the other one has an offensive line that's failing a little bit. And as the game progresses, you better have that offensive line play better than they have the last eight quarters if you're going to keep up with Caleb Williams, who eventually will make your defense break no matter how well they play for 45 or 50 minutes.
Yeah, it's there's a lot about this game that you can talk yourself into Notre Dame, and I think it would be easier to do if they hadn't had three consecutive, like, really anemic offensive performances.
I think it's been two, though, Pete. We disagree on that. I think it's been two, but I get your point because they scored 14 points. So
they scored 14 points. Right. There are different reasons for that, but if you score six touchdowns in three games, that makes it feel very ominous when you're going against a team where you probably are going to have to score five. And that's why I think the line surprises me a little bit, but then it's like you watch USC and you're like, wait a minute. It does feel like sort of a luck runs out situation if you're USC, which, Tim, I think you kind of put in your Thursday thoughts today.
Yeah, when it comes to USC's defense, I can't emphasize enough how bad they look at times trying to tackle. They've had 49 missed tackles. Now, missed tackles are a little bit subjective. They miss tackles in every way imaginable. You know, they dive at the feet of a runner, and it's just like, oh well, if we don't disrupt him a little bit, so be it. They miss straight up head on tackle opportunities, and so this is a great opportunity for Notre Dame. And if Notre Dame can be, they're in midterm exams. They've had to go to the wall a couple times, a few weeks in a row. But I think Notre Dame, when they prepare for USC, should feel like, you know what, this is a game that we're going to win. And I think they have a much better perspective on how to deal with Caleb Williams. Now, perspective and execution with a guy like Caleb Williams is two different things.
I want you guys to cut me off on this 45-second tangent about midterms and being tired, okay? for all of our lives on a message board, people will say, well, the bye is coming at a really good time. They really need their rest. The one time the bye doesn't come at a good time, everybody says it's a horrible excuse. Who cares if you're tired? How are you tired? Everybody plays five games in a row. Notre Dame is tired. If you call them weak for being tired, that's fine. That makes it a reason instead of an excuse. Notre Dame is tired trying to play football. If you want to blame them for it, good, but they are tired. And number two, we talked to a couple coaches recently. One of them who said, this is not a current Notre Dame coach. One of them who said, I had a starter ask me not to play during the week of midterms because he was so mentally tired. A starter wanted to not play
because
he was so tired during midterms.
A great starter, by the way.
So let's not pretend they're not human. You can call them weak. You can say anything you want, but it does exist when the football game is played.
I don't disagree with that. I think that
you should play if you're tired. I get that.
Yeah. Like to me, like the midterms thing is real. The eight games in a row, I think, is like this clutching at straws excuse for what's happening right now. Notre Dame has played eight games in a row a lot. It's not always the first eight games. Sometimes it's the last eight games. In 2012, they played eight games in a row. 2021, they played eight games in a row. Like that shouldn't have, the big impact that people think that it does, but midterms this week does. So if you said Notre Dame's exhausted because of midterms, I buy it. If you say it's eight games in a row, I do not.
Yeah. I think the performance against Louisville is more of just a letdown performance after going to the wall the two previous weeks.
Necessarily. If I play Virginia without Brennan Armstrong and Wake Forest eight games in a row, I think Notre Dame would kill them now.
Look how USC played against Arizona last week. And again, by the way, take a look at Arizona because they are suffering some really tough, close losses and they're playing some pretty good football. So, you know, they came to play and USC didn't, and Notre Dame and Louisville came to play and Notre Dame didn't. So that's just where we are. We did talk to Marcus Freeman earlier here. We didn't specify any of the injuries. I don't think that we have any reason to believe that there's anything further. I take it back. Somebody asked about Estime because he was limping around. Marcus Freeman at the end of the Louisville game, Marcus Freeman kind of downplayed it, said that, you know, what he goes through on a weekly basis, of course, he's not 100% this week, but he's ready to go. I think the two key ones again are the two Jadens at wide receiver, Thomas and Greathouse, because they greatly need those two guys in the mix. But we know that Jordan Faison's in the game plan right from the outset, right? There shouldn't be any reason for the scholarship wide receiver wearing number 80 to be in the mix right from the start.
Yeah, there could be an issue. I don't know if that'll happen. You know, I thought it was interesting. We talked to Jared Parker, and I think it went in John Bryce's story. Faison is a slot receiver. One of their healthy players is a slot receiver, Chris Tyree. One of the returning players is a slot receiver, Jaden Greathouse. One of the guys they like to sub in, much to Pete Sampson's chagrin, is the tight end that takes out the slot receiver, because you'd like to see the slot receiver perhaps stay in once in a while when that happens, Pete. Yes. That's a lot of slot guys. That's a lot of spots. So that is one way Faison wouldn't play. I think they owe it to themselves to see what Faison can do, because maybe Greathouse is fine and then everything's cool because we like Greathouse. I think Faison could help Chris Tyree. I think he has wide receiver skills that Chris Tyree
is flexible enough to move outside, which he has.
Greathouse, that was the point. Tyree could go outside, maybe Greathouse.
Right. Greathouse can too. You know, I think it's a valid point on your part, but I think sometimes we overplay that because they could be practicing at different positions during the week as we're talking about it.
Yeah, it's like I would like to see Faison more too, but I don't agree with sort of the sentiment that like not targeting the rest of the game was like a strategic mistake, because we have no idea what he knew in last week's game plan.
But
he could have run the play that Tyree dropped, because it's the same play that he caught the touchdown on.
He was not in on four combined third and longs and a fourth and long.
Yeah,
he could have probably helped there instead of splitting Estime wide. Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's like I don't know if they have like a true four wide in the playbook. You know, like it's like having the Mike linebacker still be in on dime. I don't know why that is, but I would be shocked if they have a whole lot of like reps of like, hey, we actually have four legitimate wide receivers on the field at the same time.
We've been talking about the phrase that we've been using since Monday's podcast was, or I guess since the game on Saturday, was offensive line rotation or offensive guard rotation. Tim, you talked about it earlier this week about you don't think that there will be any kind of rotation. In listening to Marcus Freeman talk about it, I think he left the door open for Billy Schrauf to get a series or two, maybe a series on one side and a series on the other side.
I didn't take it that way as much as if you don't play well, Schrauf is coming in.
Well, okay, sure.
I like that. I think that idea is fine because I think you should play well. Otherwise, you should be replaced. But look, an offensive line rotation, if you wanted to debut it this week, is better than debuting it last week in Louisville when you had communication issues for the last 2 weeks playing football. I mean, that was weird. An offensive line rotation at home is better than offensive line rotation on the road at Louisville. An offensive line rotation versus CMU and TSU and Navy is better than one at Louisville. And I think an offensive line rotation against USC is better than one at Louisville.
Yeah, I
kind of hope they're not rotating, though. I'd like to see wins the job and they play.
Yeah, maybe rotating.
That's what practice is for. To figure out what your best five is, and then you roll with that on the game day. Like they staged a game day tryout at Louisville.
Well, Harry Hiestand played six at times. I mean, why would that be?
Because it wasn't on the road. They went into the season with a plan. Like that was a grab bag situation last week.
I'm talking about this week. I'm not arguing for that for last week. I'm not at all.
But I guess like the fact that they did it in 2017, I don't think has anything to do with doing it last week.
I think they were doing it last week.
I'm not talking about last week.
Okay, I think I'm worried that they're doing it when guys aren't good enough, as opposed to these guys both really deserve to play in 2017 because they can bring something to the table at right tackle. Yeah. Whereas now they're like, well, gosh, everything's going wrong. So you think they're rotating because they think it makes them better, or they're trying to mitigate loss?
I think that Billy Schrauf can play because the other two guards aren't so good Billy Schrauf won't make. I think Billy Schrauf will make a significant contribution when he's in there. If one guy is struggling, put him in. I'm not looking for a rotation. I'm just saying we all thought that Billy Schrauf was going to be the starter before the season. If he's good enough right now to compete with the other two to get a series here or a series there, I don't see what's wrong with doing that. I realize it's a little bit disruptive. I may be kind of contradicting myself here because, you know, I'm talking more about this week than last week, although we wouldn't be talking about this week and inserting a guy if last week hadn't happened.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you on Schrauf that he's good enough to help you, but I would prefer it if they're like, if he's good enough to help us, then start him.
That's how I feel. I feel like you figure out who's your best five and you start your starting lineup this week.
Yeah.
And obviously, if things go incredibly south, then you have a backup guard.
Yeah. It felt like if they do it again this week, I think it will feel like it did last week. It's kind of, it's a more of a panic move than like a strategic rotation.
Anything else from Marcus Freeman's 10 minutes and 45 seconds that we spent with him? I mean, we talked about the whole wet ball. I find the USC's preparation for the weather in South Bend with this little spray gun with the punt returners. You need a fire. You need a damn fire hose is what you need. Not this little.
It just has to be really cold, right?
Isn't it a little comical how USC is trying to prepare for that?
Yeah. It feels very dainty.
I saw it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you really think? I guess it's better than nothing, but I'm not sure.
I would find it a lot more dainty and comical if it was Sam Darnold instead of Caleb Williams, because that's a problem right there. But yeah, no, I agree. What you need is a freezing cold ball that comes out of a freezer, and you try to hand that off to somebody and see if that works, because it's just going to be, what, can you blow freezing cold air on people in Southern California practice? That's tough to do too. It's going to be cold at night. It's going to be a cold night out there, because if it rains all day and stops, it's just raw. Raining all day and stopping in South Bend is very raw.
It doesn't
raw.
Sound like it's going to be as windy as they were originally saying, but they're still saying 10 to 20. They were saying in the 30 mile an hour winds. that would really disturb things for USC. Either way, I think the conditions aren't great for USC and are a factor. How much of a factor, you know, that's for others to determine the percentage, yeah. I guess.
I was wondering, because USC can run the ball well, but Tim, you make a great point. Like, okay, USC can run the ball well, and hopefully Notre Dame can too. But we all know USC can pass the ball well. So bad wind and bad cold and bad weather definitely hurts USC. No, no doubt. I can't talk myself into that, but like.
Yeah, we all love Mar.
They can certainly run.
Marshawn Lloyd is really good, man. Really good. Jawar Jordan was really good. Audric Estime is really good. Marshawn Lloyd is a cut above here that Notre Dame is going.
I agree with you.
Notre Dame was fortunate with him not playing for South Carolina last year. Irish Illustrated Insider is presented by Underdog Sports. We see a lot of you are downloading Underdog, using the promo code and having fun, which we love to see. If you haven't already checked them out, be sure to do so. It's super easy to use. You go to the app, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total than what is listed. For example, if Travis Kelce's number is set at 50 yards and you know Taylor Swift is in the house, you may feel confident he's going to be way higher than that number. Do that with 2 to 5 different players and you're in the business. If you go 5 for 5, you can multiply your money times 20. So sign up today with promo code Irish and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with my promo code Irish to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. There are a lot of fantasy companies out there, but we decided to partner with Underdog because it's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You must be 18 and older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Segment 2 coming up, burning up the boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Some things are just made for each other, like tailgates and touchdowns. We're adding one more pair to the list, Aer Lingus and college football. Join us in Dublin this August for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Too soon? Plan your winter or spring break now with non-stop flights from cities including Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles and New York. Fly in comfort to Dublin, our European hub. Go coast to coast and discover the sights of Ireland or explore any of the 50 plus European cities we connect to, including Amsterdam, London, Paris and Rome. Visit airlingus.com to book today.
Welcome back to segment 2, Burning Out the Boards. Our first question is from JackMac99. Las Vegas has Notre Dame as a 3-point favorite. What do they know that we don't?
There are a bunch of factors involved. We do have to take into consideration that, I mean, USC could have lost last week, turned a 27-point lead into having to recover an onside kick against Colorado. Last week was the Arizona game. They were winning by 6 points midway through the third quarter at Arizona State. Arizona State's 1-5. I mean, you do have to look at the opponent sometimes. And in this case, we know the issues that USC has on defense. If you look at USC offensively, no, it's pretty scary. Number one in the country. By the way, the top three scoring teams in the country are USC, Oregon, and Washington. The Pac-12 is scoring points once again this year. But there are a lot of reasons, and which is why I say Notre Dame, if they can get their head straight again and take an honest look at what USC has to offer, Notre Dame can win this game. That's why they're favored.
And I like many of the matchups for Notre Dame in this game too. Like we've talked about this all year. Like Notre Dame is built to stop a passing team in a way that they frankly haven't been for much of the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. Like Notre Dame doesn't have the Harper, Hart, Morrison combination of corners slash nickel very often. So, you know, Xavier Watts is playing well. Like certainly teams are going to try to isolate DJ Brown or Ramon Henderson or whatever the extra safety, whoever the extra safety is out there. But it's a good defense to try to get after Caleb Williams. You know, they had something similar last year until Tariq Bracey did his hamstring during the week. But if Notre Dame's secondary is fully healthy on Saturday, like that should be in Notre Dame's favor.
Yeah, I think main thing for Vegas is their models for betting and wagering and putting point spreads out there don't contain the two most important elements that Notre Dame fans and all college football fans use, would be emotion and belief, because that has nothing to do with anything. I think Notre Dame has plenty of ways to win this game. If Notre Dame's offensive line is anything like the Ohio State game, I think Notre Dame will win the game. If it's not, I can't see Notre Dame finding a way to win the game. So this all comes into what, for me, we can fast forward to the end of this thing. For me, it all comes to the offensive line. Notre Dame has many chances to win it, but zero if the offensive line isn't good.
And that is one thing like that gives me a lot of pause about the offensive line and how it played at USC last year, because it was not good. You know, they could not move the ball in short yardage on the ground. That's like where Mitchapalooza got stopped for the first time. I think they finished that game with, they averaged 3.5 yards per carry against USC, who averaged about giving up 5 yards per carry for the course of the season. So it's like USC's defense was real bad last year, and Notre Dame did not do enough to take advantage of it on the ground. They have to do enough to take advantage of it on the ground on Saturday.
Well, it was my understanding last year that USC changed some things up with their blocking schemes, and Notre Dame didn't adjust to that very well. I do know that they have, USC now has Bear Alexander in the middle of their defensive line, and that is a huge concern against Notre Dame's interior offensive line. JackMac99, you are a subscriber. I think that's where I got that question from. You are. I would recommend reading Trojan Assets and Irish Inroads from yesterday. It talks about all the areas where we think Notre Dame can make inroads, but also while addressing the obvious strengths that USC has on defense.
One more thing, and this should probably go to the end again. Remember we talked about the edge rushers for Louisville and how you should be concerned that Jalate had 26 pressures and Heron had 21 pressures. Well, Solomon Bird has 23, Jamil Muhammad has 21, and Bear Alexander has 18. So as bad as they are, there is some boom and bust potential here. I don't know if that's the right word. They can make big plays that make up for the obvious shortcomings they have fundamentally as a defense.
And I'm glad you brought up Bird and Muhammad, because they absolutely do put pressure on the quarterback. They also, Bird especially, doesn't give a damn about holding the edge.
Yeah, so, no, and sometimes that's great. 9 yard run for Notre Dame, but third and nine.
Just does not care about if the coaches are saying, Solomon, you got to hold the edge. He isn't hearing it, man.
He's got a job for the NFL later on, huh? Exactly. He's coming off the edge.
That is exactly right. Exactly right. Question from MMB4. With the forecast of rain Saturday, will USC load the box in anticipation of the Irish wanting to run the ball? Will the result versus USC be any different than Louisville?
Yeah, this is a good question. I wish I hadn't brought it up in the first segment. My concern for picking Notre Dame is that USC can run the ball very, very well. So if it gets sloppy, USC can run the ball too. And I want to see if Notre Dame can run the ball off the line. I think every defense will load the box and see if Sam Hartman's receivers can get open consistently to score touchdowns and beat them. Because you know what? If Jaden Thomas gets open for one 30-yard gain, they still got to go 50 more yards.
Yeah, Notre Dame's ability to hit chunk plays in the pass game has been a disaster the last three games. And you can talk about like the Ohio State plan being intentional and what, but like they cannot push the ball down the field. And that is, you need chunk plays to beat USC. They've hit, I think that should have the stats in front of me. I track sort of passes of 20 yards or more, but like Sam Hartman, I think is 2 of 16 in the last three games on passes of an excess of 20 yards. Like that's a concerning trend regardless of what your game plan is.
And so Pete and Tim, I looked this up a couple days ago, not on my breakfast table, but I think USC, is there 130 teams? They're 128 right now.
I think it's 133.
Okay, 131. All right, well, they are 130th, I believe. Could be 129th in explosive plays given up. So you have to have explosive plays to beat USC because that's how everybody's moving the ball on them. You have to have explosive plays because they're giving them to you. You've got to find a way to get them. So if Notre Dame can get that going, there's their chance. There's a good chance for Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame should be able to score points against USC.
I agree. I'm shocked. You think about like how good Sam Hartman was throwing the deep ball in the first four games of the season, or another way to look at it, right up until he got rolled against Central Michigan. He just has not been the same pushing the ball vertically ever since. And yeah, it's 2 of 14 for 64 yards. Like that's alarming to me.
Yeah, and USC is like they're in the bottom 10% of every long scrimmage play.
They're in the top percent of all the ones they get too.
Exactly. And so what you guys are saying, I mean, and from this standpoint, then it's weakness versus weakness. Notre Dame's downfield game against USC's inability to and those are long scrimmage plays. Those aren't all passes. So there's some long runs in there too. But that's a weakness versus weak. Oftentimes we talk about strength versus strength. Who's going to win? Well, a lot of times the game is decided by who wins the weakness versus weakness battle, depending upon what it is.
To be fair, Notre Dame and USC are actually pretty close in long scrimmage plays. It's just as Pete pointed out, they've came in an early chunk for Notre Dame.
Yeah,
I think they're continually happening for USC.
We were completely wrong about Notre Dame winning the line of scrimmage against Louisville. So was everybody else that I heard comment on that. Now, I know Josh Pay from 24/7 picked Louisville, which was a great call, but I don't think he was talking about interior line play. He was talking about a quarterback matchup, whatever. We were wrong about that. The Notre Dame coaching staff was absolutely convinced they were going to win the line of scrimmage, and they obviously were wrong about that as well.
It'd be interesting to see if they're absolutely convinced they're going to win this line of scrimmage. Because they didn't last year. I'm pointing it out because they did not last year. So that would be an interesting way of looking at it. Now, it's a different USC line. I don't mean to pretend that USC's line is going to carry over from last year to this. They have grad transfers coming in and they still really haven't gelled. And I guess not that healthy. Anyway, Notre Dame should be able to handle the lines this week. We said that last week too. So we'll just say it again, right? Just keep saying it until we see it happen.
I mean, we're going to evaluate the game at hand. That's exactly. We were wrong last week. Question from Florida Irish 76. While play calling has been an issue the past couple of weeks, it seems as though Marcus Freeman has the ultimate say in what the offensive philosophy is. Does Freeman, a defensive-minded coach who believes in trestle ball, need to take a step back from the offense and let whoever the OC is run the show?
So the one issue I have with, because fundamentally I believe that you have to move away from the 2002 method and the 2012 Notre Dame method of running an offense. And I felt the 2020 team for Notre Dame was absolutely 100% correct in how they ran an offense. It's why they got the chance to play Alabama in a playoff game rather than losing along the way. What does Marcus Freeman have to run a different style of offense right now on the perimeter? Doesn't he have to lean on his running game?
Of course he does. I mean, you can argue that they don't have the personnel to do that, but we had a question on message board. Why not just change the offensive approach?
That's what people said on the message board before the Alabama game, so they could lose by 190 instead of 100.
I mean, you can do that, and it'll be worse.
I mean, ideally, it would be great if Notre Dame would change a philosophy of trestle ball or 2012 offense, but I don't know what they can do that. We're talking about a preferred walk-on that I think should play more. Pete and I argued if a preferred walk-on should play more. That's a bad sign.
I mean, I think that even if Notre Dame was fully healthy, Marcus Freeman would still want to play this style of football. that's a different conversation than that if they have to play it right now.
Right. Yes.
Which I think they have to play it right now. They do not have another choice. But that's that other conversation is probably a good podcast discussion in February. Right now, it's just like, this is like emergency battle stations time for Notre Dame. Like they could win the game 7-6 on a defensive touchdown. They could play Iowa style football on Saturday night and win. That would be totally fine.
I want to clarify what I said about the 2020 team. So this, I don't know if this offensive line can play that style, but if Notre Dame was going into this game with Eichenberg and Patterson and Banks and Hainsey and Kramer and all those guys that were in there, I would say USC better get ready because they are going to get hit. Like Notre Dame would go out with those five guys and hit USC up front the whole game. I don't know if this offensive line, I know this offensive line isn't as good as the 2020 line, but I don't know if they can go out and do that and survive, but they have to try.
Yeah. And you know, Pete, let's real briefly talk about this. I mean, because it is part of a bigger question, and that is how Marcus Freeman believes that Notre Dame will win present, not so much present, but in the future. I think that when he says offensive, defensive line driven team, that he speaks to that it loud and clear. Does he have a big enough picture viewpoint of how offensive football should be in 2023 moving forward?
I don't know. I don't, but it's like when he was looking for offensive coordinators last year, one candidate that he vetted at least was Sean Lewis, who went to Colorado. And what I was told is the reason that he just didn't think that was a match is because it was too much pass game.
Right.
It wasn't enough committed to the run. So I think this style of football is how Marcus Freeman wants to play it. You know, where they've totally fallen apart this year is like there's no play action game whatsoever. Like if you're going to be a run first team and win at the line, you got to be able to hit it over the top. They no longer can hit it over the top.
Can we finish off though with a micro conversation that Tobias Merriweather, Jordan Faison, Rico Flores, injured Jaden Thomas, injured Jaden Greathouse, and converted Chris Tyree are not a team that's going to go out and throw the ball over and win games?
Yeah,
not even close.
Okay. No, and in answer to the question about should Freeman let the offensive coordinator run the show, probably if Andy Ludwig was your offensive coordinator.
But yeah, I mean, the head coach gets to decide, like, hey, I want to take 5-6 shots a game. Like that's the head coach will say something like that, and then the offensive coordinator gets to figure out what those 5 or 6 shot plays are. So I don't think Freeman is constraining Parker or whoever, or Ludwig or whoever the OC could have been or is, or but he can set sort of the parameters of, hey, I want to play this style of game. You tell me what calls you want to make.
I think what Pete Sampson was saying is there's 5 or 6 shots dedicated to Faison coming up in this game.
Yes.
And Jacobs 3. It was always said that Jared Parker looked good compared to last year because of Sam Hartman. I didn't know it was always said that way, but Sam Hartman helps. Did we overrate Hartman, or is this a bigger concern for Parker? I mean, Hartman was going to help the coordinator this year compared to Pine. Cool with that.
Hartman's overrated. You mean the guy that had the 11-play, 96-yard drive to essentially beat Ohio State, and the guy that led the 10-play, 95-yard drive to beat Duke? We get amnesia every 7 days. Every 7 days we get amnesia. Did he play?
I want to use that question, Priester. I hope we get to use the question later on.
I mean, did Hartman play one of his better games last week? Absolutely not. But the entire team played one of their worst collective game. Sam Hartman's not overrated. He just led them to what should have been 2 victories against Ohio State and Duke.
He was bad last week. Like, we can say that out loud. Sam Hartman was really bad against Louisville. I think some of this has to do with how good he was the first 4 games. His passer rating in the first 4 games would have crushed the all-time NCAA record if he did it for a whole season. Like, crushed it. I think only 3 quarterbacks have finished with a passer rating better than 200 ever, and he was at 220 after 4 games. Unfortunately, the last 3 games,
Ohio State, though, did it?
What's that?
Did it go much down? I mean, it went down from that, but Ohio State's passer rating was fine, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
No, just too many throws.
Not pushed to the, like, passer rating involves like yards per attempt
and stuff.
Fell off the table. His passer rating the last three games, if that was his entire season and you plugged it into this year's rankings, he would actually be one spot below Phil Dracovic.
Really good Phil Dracovic or Phil Dracovic?
No, this year's Phil Dracovic.
Oh, sorry about that. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was the one that should have started at Notre Dame in 2019.
No, because he was good. because that player never existed, Tim.
Oh, well, I thought he was good. Sorry.
And yet, he led Notre Dame on 11-play, 96-yard drive at the end of the Ohio State game and a 10-play, 95-yard drive at the end of the Duke game. So at the end of the game, when the game was on the line, he came through. I don't think that he's overrated, but he didn't play well last week, and his numbers certainly have fallen off as the level of competition has gone up. Question from Need a Turnover. Do you see the offensive line playing much better now that it shouldn't have to rely on a silent count?
I hope that's not the reason they looked bad.
I doubt that that's the reason they look bad, but it will definitely be beneficial not to have to do the silent count this week.
Yeah, because so. I mean, don't you feel like there's two issues here? They don't always know who to block, and then they don't physically do the blocking job when they do. I'm not sure which one is easier to fix.
Well, obviously there was a silent count issue with Duke because of the stuff, but
yeah,
they won't have to deal with that this week. Question from E. Scheiler. What impact, if any, do you think the loss of Matt Bayless is having on this team and the way the season has played out through seven games?
I don't think it helped. It is hard. I mean, he was very good in the record of Notre Dame teams was very good in November with Matt Bayless. So if we're going to attribute that to strength and conditioning coach, he had a heck of a run there. Undefeated in 18, 5-0 in 19, although they lost the week before to Michigan, which they did not look that strong. Undefeated in 20, undefeated in 21 against awful, awful, awful football teams. And 3-1 in 2022, losing to Caleb Williams. That's a really good job. 17, they were 2-2. I'd like to point out 17, they were 2-2. They got shredded by Miami and then got beat pretty good by Stanford.
Well, once you get in season, it's mainly maintenance, and they haven't had a bye week. So, I mean, it's been mainly maintenance week to week. Does Fred Hale not know how to run the program that Matt Bayless had once the season started? I find that a little hard to believe. I it's not something that I would point to and say, oh, they don't have Matt Bayless, so now they're not as strong during the season.
Right. I don't think that's the case, but like apples to apples, if Notre Dame loses its head coach, do you think that the assistant coach that steps up should be able to run the team as well as the head coach does? I know it's apples to apples. I know there's a lot more going on. But
encompasses so much more. But
I think it's fair to give the side eye to that operation when 50% of your receivers have hamstring injuries.
I was just going to bring that up. The hamstring issues, that is significant. And that can happen to anybody, but there also could be a cause and effect there.
Yeah, but it's like Notre Dame, when it doesn't happen, Notre Dame will tell you how good their strength and conditioning program is.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's also fair is if 50% of 4 is easier to attain than 50% of 10, and most people have 10 receivers, not 4. So,
two issues at play here.
Two guys get a hamstring pull. Oh, 50% of the guys are hurt. Well, of course they are. We don't have any. There's no players on the team. So that's an issue.
Ugh.
Yeah. The Great House Thomas and apparently Merriweather, at least to some degree, have been fighting hamstring issues. I'm glad you brought that up, Pete.
Colsey's a knee.
Yeah. Like Salerno happens. It's football. You're in a car crash every play. But the hamstring, your soft tissue injuries, those are ones where I think as a training staff, one of your jobs is to like, all right, how do we minimize this? And like,
no doubt.
They've got hit bad.
No doubt.
Next question from KJ Mills time. Aside from Jalen Snead, at what point this season do we start to see some of the underclassmen linebackers getting quality game reps? And I am going to duck while you guys answer the question.
Yeah, and I'm going to duck while I let Samson talk first here.
Oh, man. I almost just exited the Zoom meeting. Bertrand, Kaiser, Leofau are Notre Dame's best three linebackers by a wide, wide margin. I'm not saying Notre Dame is starting Dick Butkus, Mike Singletary, and Ray Lewis out there.
They're definitely not, by the way. I could actually talk to that too. From
watching. They are very, very good college players who make the defense go. The younger linebackers are not close. If they were, they would be playing. What did we just talk about on the offensive line? They're rotating guards for performance issues. If there were performance issues at linebacker, they would rotate. There are not. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, one, the starters are good, even if people don't want to admit it. And two, the backups are not close to being at the same level as the starters. I would like to see some of these guys play more when Notre Dame's up 35 points, but that just has not happened.
Yeah, I think everybody feels good about Drake Bowen and Jay Nosberry, especially as linebackers moving forward. But you don't start playing for next year with six games to go. You don't do that to a team. You will lose. Imagine if Kaiser and Bertrand and Leofa, Bertrand especially, I think that's usually the focus for people that want changes at linebacker. You sit Bertrand, a healthy Bertrand. Do you know what's going to happen to your defense? Your number 15 scoring defense in the country, it's not going to be good. I don't understand where this is coming from. Somebody said now's the time to play Jalen Snead more. No, it's not. Because he's not tuned into what they're doing defensively well enough to run him out there. This is low-level football conversation. That's what this is. Low-level football conversation.
I thought you were going to say, you know, you're going to lose the team if you started playing backups. I said, you're also going to lose football games if you start playing your backup defensive lineman. So, you know, Jay Nosberry was one of my highest rated freshmen coming in. And I know I had Bowen in the top nine. I couldn't find it somehow in my files just now. I think Osbury was number two behind Jeremiah Love. And I'm going to pat myself on the back right now as far as I can. Jeremiah Love was the first one. And Osbury is number two. And you know, the best thing they have going for him right now for Notre Dame fans and for me and you is we don't know that they're not good yet enough to play. Throw them in there 100%. And find out, like when Niles Morgan went running in there and he was running left and right and they were going for Northwestern's running backs were going for 60 yards at a pop. I can't believe these questions get asked every year. But one thing we really know is that you should always put in the underperforming freshman wide receiver every year because he's the key to your offense. That's why I want Jordan Faison. Just kidding. No, but yeah, you know, seriously, this is what people complain about every year. You don't know the freshmen aren't good yet. That's why you want them to play. They're not going to be great either right away.
Braylon James is another to speak to what you're talking about receiver. And
I love Osbury. I think Osbury's a fantastic. Yeah,
no, I do too. Drake Bowen's going to be good too, but you're not playing those guys now. You're not playing Braylon James right now because virtually every day on the practice field, he proves he's not ready. So what would you like? What do you expect to happen when you put him in a game situation? If you want to get Marcus Freeman fired prematurely, go ahead and play all these guys, and then you can have another coaching transition.
It's a smaller sample size, but Jalen Snead leads the team in missed tackle percentage. It's not totally fair to Jalen Snead because he gets fewer opportunities to make a tackle than Leofau, Bertrand, and Kaiser do. Kaiser is the lowest by far, and he has been for 4 years. Also gets fewer opportunities than J.D. Bertrand does, but that's a story for another day. So Snead is in a role where it works out well. Somebody asked if Jalen Snead could play more in a press conference, right? Just Monday. And Freeman said, we got to get him in that package. He's doing a great job rushing the passer, but we do not want him in there because I don't think he can stand there and hold up against the run. It was a direct quote from the coach on Monday.
Yeah, it's true. Like if there's a linebacker question, I would be like, it would be like, why doesn't Jack Kaiser play more?
Yes, I'm with that question. I can see he should play more. Statistics tell us he should.
That has been your question, Tio.
It has been. It's
multiple times. Question from Play Like a Champ 7. Do you think Notre Dame tries to implement a game plan that aims at controlling the clock and limiting USC's offensive possessions?
I 99% think they're going to try that game plan.
It's actually 100%.
I knew. But now Priester has to jump in.
So it's 99.5. It's 99.5. Take an average. No, it's how you win. It's how you win. If you don't like the way it is, I get that. but it gives you the best chance to win this game.
I like that Priester just averaged our answers and made it 99.5. That was good. Okay. 9,900 is technically. So Priester's going 99.5 on average. Yep. That's what they're doing, though. That is exactly what they're doing.
Yep. Irish HDL, Jordan Faison, showed well in the spring and summer camps. He wasn't used until game 7. On the first pass, he gained a first down. On the second pass to him, he scored a touchdown. He wasn't targeted again the rest of the game. Why?
I would have targeted Jordan Faison on some third downs. Or not targeted him. I would have played Jordan Faison on some third downs, for sure. Your receivers aren't good enough to keep Jordan Faison off the field when he's the guy that made two plays in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I just don't know how much he knew of the game plan. Yeah, can you just be like, hey, go out there and run this route? It's probably a lot more complicated than that.
He himself made it sound like he did not have a playbook issue. I don't know if you were.
Yeah, he said it was there because that doesn't mean it's true, though. But he
I know.
Yeah. I mean, does he know half of it? Does he know 80% of it? I have no idea. But this week, after getting some real reps, I would think that, all right, you've got the full menu here with Jordan Faison in a way that you probably didn't like. And like, I don't know. It's like last week, I can understand the coach's reluctance to putting him on the field because of everything that represented. Like, this is one of the 85 scholarships. Just like there was a lot there. And also, like, look, Jordan Faison, can he block somebody?
Third and 11 and fourth and 11, he's not asked to block somebody. That's a fair point. I do want to throw in, because Pete is like this in the past, that they are not taking out Scottie Pippen for Jordan Faison here, right?
They're not.
We're going to wrap up with a question from Zombie by Blood, then we'll have our predictions. And the question is, with the playoffs out of the picture, what do you think a win Saturday would mean for the program?
I could go off on a huge tangent about this because it's a question I wanted to include. I think people forget that Notre Dame was 5-3 losses. They had 3 losses when they beat Clemson. 10-0, undefeated Clemson, and it was the most fun Notre Dame fans had had since 2020 when they beat undefeated Clemson. It is a big deal to play college football games like this one. And they are in the unfortunate situation, from a fan perspective, this happened really fast, of having to beat USC. They kind of have to beat USC right now. 3 out of 4 losses, including Louisville, going to the bye week is a rough spot. For Notre Dame.
To salvage the regular season, you have to win the rest of the games. I mean, it's just, you have to win the rest of your games.
I feel like they could split USC and Clemson, and on December 1st, we'd be like, okay, like, the season was maybe not fulfilling, but they did some good things. But in real time, if they lose on Saturday, if they won the last 4, right? If they won the last 4 and won a bowl game, it's going to be a rough 2 weeks.
I think USC supersedes Clemson quite a bit right now, including December 1st. Although I get your point that when you look back and say 9-3 is fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, USC is fine. Yeah. Clemson has 2 losses and. Yeah. Yeah. Tim, I'm sorry. You wanted me to slip a question in here from WCarry14. And why don't you two guys answer this question? Notre Dame wins close if?
Yeah. And I want to answer it in real world times. If they do control the line of scrimmage offensively, bleed some clock, keep Caleb Williams off the field, and can run the ball so they can use play action pass with Sam Hartman. It sounds as antiquated as it sounds, but that's exactly what Notre Dame's going to try to do. So that's the way they can win close.
Pete Sampson, Notre Dame wins close if?
They win the turnover battle. I realize that sounds like cliche analysis, but as I've pondered the Louisville game more, I was like, well, wait a minute. They were -4. Like, how often are you winning a game if you're -4? Yeah. So I looked it up. In FBS versus FBS games since 2019, teams that were -4 went 6-117. And I'm sure you could say, like, well, wait a minute. Hartman threw a pick at the end of the game. Does that really count? So really, like, they were -3. Well, teams that were -3 went 37-303. And teams that were even -2, 142-573. They won 20% of the time. Like a plus or minus, if you are plus two in turnover margins, you win 80% of the time. And Notre Dame was minus four, which like turnover on down should be a turnover. I'm going to like, when I retire from this, I'm just going to take that to the NCAA and like change the stats. But like, really, they were, Notre Dame was minus six in the game.
You're right about turnover on downs, or they should have something like if you turn the ball over on your side of the 50 compared to turnover on downs when you don't go for a field goal and stuff like that. That's all crazy. Right.
Tim O'Malley, Notre Dame wins comfortably if...
No, now I'm jumping to Pete Sampson's thing. If they win the turnover battle by a lot. They are not beating USC comfortably playing regular football right now. Yep. They are not keeping Caleb Williams out for four quarters if they don't win the turnover battle by a bunch.
Yeah, I feel like my answer to this is what your answer to the first one was, like the offensive line like gets its stuff together. Because if it does, could you have an out-of-body experience and this game looks like 2017? That would not, well, that would surprise me. I think that is within the realm of possibility if the offensive line gets its stuff together this week.
And Tim O'Malley, Southern Cal wins a close game if...
I think they win a close game if both teams go out and play their best.
Okay. Pete?
It's I think USC is a little bit better because their quarterback is better. I still, the way Notre Dame, I understand what they were trying to do against USC last year, defending Caleb Williams, the runner. They just didn't do it properly. Like they didn't try to get behind Caleb Williams. They just did. You know, if you can repurpose some of the discipline you showed against Riley Leonard and Brendan Armstrong, then I think that can make a slight difference enough to win the game.
Yeah, they didn't try to get behind Caleb Williams, but I mean, they played it in such a manner that that's exactly what was going to happen because he's going to step up, and you can't play the chase Caleb Williams game. He's got to be coming at you. It can't be. And you know, when you see him get sacked, like any quarterback, if you have him surrounded in the pocket, if you stay in your lanes and you surround him, he won't get away. But if you approach it like they did last year, which they absolutely won't, I mean, you can say they didn't mean to get behind him, but they did. Well, then you, in this instance, you have to make a concerted effort not to rush on the outside and get behind him.
I think an interesting aspect of this game is that Caleb Williams is destroying the blitz, but that when Caleb Williams is pressured, he's having problems. It sounds like you're defeating the purpose here. He is killing blitzes, but when he's pressured without a blitz,
right,
he is struggling. Can Notre Dame put any pressure on anybody without blitzing?
Yeah, well, that's a problem. And then Southern Cal wins comfortably if we can – how many different things can we name there? There's
number one's the offensive line plays anywhere near it did the last eight quarters.
Yeah. I would say it's bad enough with Marshawn Lloyd. if he has the kind of game that Austin Jones had last year, then the spread will probably be more than what last year was, because you know Notre Dame doesn't have Drew Pine to throw the football against USC. By the way, I did see this. It's true. In watching film of USC this week, I saw Drew Pine catch a pass against USC.
Huh.
He caught a pass against USC.
So how about that? To put this in context for Jack and Pete and everybody listening, we had received a note about about a college football player that smokes too much weed, like he's a really good college football player. And right after that, Tim Priester goes, "I just saw Drew Pine catch a pass from USC." I was like, "I don't know if you should be partaking in that, Tim." watching video.
I swear I saw it.
My answer to this one, I don't know if Zachariah Branch is going to play in the game, but if Bryce McPherson hits a line drive punt and Zachariah Branch catches it, I could see Notre Dame losing by a lot.
Yeah, he did not play. He has not played the last couple of weeks, Zachariah.
Correct, yeah.
He didn't. I mean, you want to – I've talked about this for weeks. Taj Washington, Brendan Rice, who is the best of the group, Mario Williams, Zachariah Branch, Dorian Singer can't get on the damn field. They can't – he can't get targeted hardly.
He's like Faison. He can't get out there. There's no
– and then – Kyron Hudson's a guy that's new to the equation. Michael Jackson III is still there. Deuce Robinson's a freshman. I think he's been a little banged up. The depth of their wide receiver core is really absurd. All right, enough about that. It is time for what I think is probably one of the most difficult predictions, will be the most difficult prediction of the year.
Yeah, I could see Notre Dame losing by 20. I could see Notre Dame winning by 20. I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen on Saturday night. So I'm going to err on the side of Las Vegas and say Notre Dame wins 28-25. I just don't know. I think it may be a long time before we watch Notre Dame football and feel like we know what's going to happen again. I think the rest of the season could feel very random on a week-by-week basis. Priester, this is your saying, but I'm going to steal it. Like, it's not a 12-game season. It's 12 one-game seasons. I think Notre Dame feels, as much as I can remember recently, I feel like Notre Dame is playing 12 one-game seasons this year. And what happens one week doesn't necessarily predict what's going to happen the next week, good or bad. So when in doubt, go with Vegas. Notre Dame 28, USC 25.
I can't see Notre Dame winning by 20. Even like in that Clemson scenario last year was, you know, block punt, interception, touchdown, interception at the 10-yard line, and then great offensive line. That is the path to winning by 20, correct?
It's
the exact same path of winning by 20 as what they did to Clemson last year when I thought they would beat Clemson, but nothing like that. I don't think USC will win by 20. I think Notre Dame is going to play very good football. I'm going against Vegas. I can't see them pulling it out when one side has Caleb Williams, unless everything goes perfectly for Notre Dame throughout, but also in the fourth quarter. So I am closer to the USC 34, Notre Dame 30. I am very confident Notre Dame will play well on defense, and it won't be enough because I still think USC's edge rushers in Bird and Muhammad and Bear Alexander inside are going to make life difficult for Blake Fisher and the guards in Correll. I think Joe Alt's going to play great in this game because he was a victim of some circumstance last week, and Joe Alt's going to come to play, man.
He might kill a guy.
Until I see those four guys play, I know the USC has fundamental issues on defense, but they still have players. So I'm in the USC 34, Notre Dame 30 range.
You know, I think the thing that makes it the most problematic for me in picking a victory, and I haven't decided that yet, but Marshawn Lloyd and their ability to run the football, you know, he is so good. And that's such a nice balance to what they can do offensively. And again, talking about the style of attack that Notre Dame is probably going to choose to employ this week to get a victory, USC's defense would really have to collapse for Notre Dame to score in the, I mean, Notre Dame, I don't think 28 gets it done. I think it would have to be in the 30s. And right now I'm just not sure that they can get there. I think they play way better than they did last week, but
I completely agree. They'll play way better than last week and
the one flip side, and then I'll wrap it up with this. USC is very fortunate to be undefeated right now. They haven't been playing quality football. They've been really erratic, and their tackling is just absolutely atrocious. So tough game to predict. I will do that in Friday's preview. We ask you to check out irisillustrated.com. If you're not a subscriber, we will have a pre and post game instant analysis. And then, of course, for this game, we will also have a pre-Irish Illustrated overtime and a post-game Irish Illustrated overtime. Until Saturday, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.